Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, Paul, is that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, what's the catch?
Yeah, but after talking to them, it all made sense, right? Because there isn't one!
You got me!
Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt.
You are right, my friend.
And they cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you and to all their users.
I'm living in a cell phone dead zone, but not anymore thanks to Mint Mobile. You can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages.
Because Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number, isn't that convenient, along with all your existing contacts.
Ditch those overpriced wirelesses with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month.
Yeah, so to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's my last name, R-U-S-T.
That's mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's your last name, R-U-S-T.
So cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's me.
New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I just want to say as we close this ad out, there were no edits. We nailed this.
Nailed it.
It's like we were on a Mint Mobile phone call.
Beautiful.
I don't like blood and guts, but I love them when they're lengthily discussed. 'Cause nothing's more relaxing than the cries of death and lust. So spend a 10. Perhaps
you should grow a beard.
This is With Gorley and Rust for Bram Stoker's Dracula.
I am Matt Gorley and I have crossed oceans of time to be with you.
Yes, and I am Paul Rust and I have crossed oceans of Ocean Spray cranberry juice, which looks like
blood.
Looks like blood, does it not? Now you are doing a true Gary Oldman as Dracula, whereas I'm going full on somebody's impression of Bela Lugosi's impression of Bela Lugosi.
I think that's what Gary Oldman is doing.
No, oh my gosh, Gary Oldman on another...
Yeah.
Level. I mean, obviously we're going to jump into the movie. We're going to talk about our podcast here. But those different looks, I mean, that's the headline for me with Bram Stoker's Dracula, all the different Dracula looks. It reminds me of like now when you go see a Elton John biopic or Elvis, yeah. They make sure to get in every era, even if the timeline doesn't work, because we're like, oh, we love when Elton John had that haircut and those big shoulder pads in the early 90s. We'll just squeeze it a decade. Like this, he got all of his looks.
Yeah.
It's a true biopic of Dracula. Yeah.
I mean, this movie frequently, though it's called Bram Stoker's Dracula, goes above and beyond duty from Bram Stoker's Dracula, including his, I believe, Klimt-inspired kimonos and wardrobe.
Beautiful. I mean where this podcast is, down. Is inspired by that as well.
Well, this is with Gourley and Rust. So this is Gourley and Rust talking to you now.
And you are with Gourley and Rust by listening to us now, but the show is also called With Gourley and Rust.
Now that we're clear, here's a little bit of business. If you appreciate and like what you're hearing, you can get more at patreon.com/withgourleyandrust. There are feature-length film commentaries. There are mailbag episodes. There are cozy tournaments and cozy awards, which come out this week. Yes. No, by the time you hear this, it will already be
out today.
Is it right? No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
No, Thursday.
Thursday. That's right. Thursday.
No, Tuesday. You're right. Tuesday. I set it to the wrong date. It's supposed to be out today.
Today. Hey, it's coming out today.
Today. We come into America.
I think this is what Billy Corgan was talking about when he sang Today is the Greatest Day I Ever Known. It was like, oh, the mailbag came out today. The mailbag. Or no, quite the opposite. Not the mailbag. The Cozy Awards, where we choose the winners of the Cozy Awards for this year. Now, that includes all the movies that we watched over the last year, and we judge them on a horror movie's most important factor, the C factor, not the X factor, the factor. Cozy.
If you're live streaming right now, and I'm talking to you guys out there, live screaming, just for fun, refresh your Patreon page because it just went up.
Oh, you should listen to the live screaming while you listen to the new Cozy Awards episode simultaneously. I think that would make for a good listening experience.
I just realized we put up the live screaming video for all to hear. Same with the podcast. It's not just a Xenomorph subscription. But I have to put that up there too. Hold on.
That's so fun, guys. Yeah, so that's the other component of the Patreon. Yeah, we do these little live streaming, live screaming. But I don't know, before we hopped on the mics here, we looked, we got on, chatted with everybody, said hello. Jeff on there, he pointed out to me, kind of blew my mind, something I never thought of, Matt.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, Coppola really had to use all the stuff he learned working with Roger Corman.
Oh, right.
And I never really put that together, like that Coppola had made a Roger Corman movie and now this...
he's feel it in this one.
Oh, boy. That's the atmosphere and the vibe is... I love it, but...
Yeah.
Hop on over there. Was there any other news?
Well, yeah. First of all, the cozies are now officially up, which means get in on that and just find out who's won the Cozy Award for 2023. All as always, Umar, Dustin, and Brantley join us for this and take us through.
Yes, they do.
And they go above and beyond this time, I have to say.
Truly. Yeah. I mean, that was the best yet.
This Dracula episode is just a little bonus one-off because we wanted something spooky in there for Halloween. Comes out on Patreon on the 29th of September. The 6th of October, if you're a free feed listener, reminding you that you can get episodes a week early and ad-free if you're a Patreon subscriber.
That's right. So now the spooky, cool October season is either about to happen or you're in it right now if you're listening. Or you're listening to this in July and you're just... mentally,
I'm telling you,
in
it's
a spooky season
in full effect here because we had at the Gorlund Manor, we had our foray, our opening day into the holiday seasons this weekend. It was amazing.
When first I pulled up yesterday and I saw the yard, what would you call it? I said decorations yesterday, and then as I said, I was like, is that the right word?
That's right.
Decor?
Decorations.
Decorations. And
Decorporations.
Decorporations is what I want. When I pulled up, though, and I saw those, I wish you could have heard my heart, because it was singing. I was like, it's here. Halloween is here. It the is. Spooky season has arrived. Like seeing that, and my particular favorite, the no vacancy sign, where your neighbors saw it a year or two ago, like, so you guys are doing an Airbnb thing? No, idiots.
We are
it's
doing
Halloween.
A psycho thing, you doll.
You dolt.
Well, this weekend, oh my God, just Glenn and I, we hopped out to Home Depot to pick up we need some finishing touches.
Fun.
And they have these, you know, huge things that you can press buttons to activate, and they put the buttons all out on the floor so she could just step on them and activate them.
So people know, Glenn is your daughter, not like a peer, a friend of yours.
No, it's Chucky's child, Glenn, and I. No, Glenn is my daughter.
Yeah, and so she went on the floor. And, mm-hmm.
And you know, Glenn is, she's a firebrand. She's a hellion. And she just, this weekend, happened to be in one of those perfect moods. And she and I went out, and then we went to Spirit Halloween store, which she did actually, for the first time, get scared by one of those animatronic clown things. But she then goes, Daddy, hold you. Daddy's safe. Which I'm just saying that this never happened before. She's a mama's girl and always has been.
That's nice.
Then we went to Trader Joe's, got some pumpkin spiders, had a couple treats, came home, we decorated, we watched Talk to Me, that horror movie. Not Glenn. Yeah. Not Glenn.
I saw it in the theater a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to talk in the pod about Talk to Me. I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it too. Yeah. It was good.
I experienced a walkout during that movie. How rare is that? Usually you don't get, but after a really violent scene, I won't spoil it, the wall and the floor. When the scene was over, a true stand up and walk out of the theater. I was like, whoo, I can't remember the last time somebody was pushed to leave out of, in that way.
It might have been 1992, Bram Stoker's Dracula, when they did test screenings and it was too gory. Thank you, Brantley, for the research.
Yes, thank you, Brantley Palmer, with your amazing research again. Yeah, because there are certainly some blood gushings in this, but choice moments, I guess, as opposed to the... that's funny that the test screen... Who do you think... saw that that they were so like, was it a bunch of
I'll bet it was
choir boys,
John Milius, George Lucas, Brian De Palma, Steven Spielberg, and Marty Scorsese.
Okay, well, you've evoked their names right now, Matt.
Yeah,
I wanted to talk on this episode at some point about this little, let's say 1990 or even 1991 to 92 snapshot of the film Bratz.
Take it away.
Like, what are they all up to at this point?
It's an interesting time, right?
Yeah.
Because they've all gone mainstream.
Yeah, and it's about 20 years since they broke through, just to give you a sense of, like, where they would be. But, what I think it basically boils down to, they're all trying to make things they saw as kids and liked. And maybe that's always been the case with some of the film brats, but going back to like what got them into movies, so like Spielberg always comes out like 89-90, right? And then Hook. And both of the guy named Joe is the basis of Always. It was a movie he loved growing up, and since Jaws was like, oh, I'll remake a guy named Joe into Always. And then Hook, obviously, like Peter Pan's story.
And based on a guy named Hook.
Yeah, Charlie Hook, I think, is his name. No, Captain Hook. And then Scorsese, 91, does Cape Fear, so he does a remake.
Ooh, interesting.
Coppola, 92. Dracula does like a, and I imagine as a theater guy coming up, and you watch this, it has amazing moments of like filmed play, theatrical trickery.
For sure. Yeah, we'll get into that.
That I'm like, oh, he's even going to a place of like, What do I love about making movies? I like doing this kind of stagecraft stuff. It's like each of them in their 50s, 40s, I don't know, trying to get at something again that's even predating stuff they ever like. But and then De Palma, 92, Raising Cain. It's basically he hasn't done a thriller movie in 8 years. And it's back to the kind of the well that worked.
When did he do Bonfire of the Vanities?
That's 1990. And you could also track with all of these guys having failures like 1990. Yeah. Except, interestingly, Scorsese, who was out in the wild for like a decade, but then had Goodfellas, which is like the best out of anything any of those fellas were making in that 10-year span after.
Entertainment Magazine was calling this movie before it came out Bonfire of the Vampires because of rumored problems.
Interesting.
And squabbles.
Well, because Peter Guber, who worked at Warner Brothers, who produced Batman, and through the success of that with John Peters, bopped over to Sony when they bought Columbia and TriStar, and they became the heads of it. They set up Bonfire of the Vanities at Warner Brothers. Then they go over to Columbia, TriStar, set up Hook and Dracula.
Whoa.
So they're all these kind of huge, big budgeted, auteurist visions. Like in a way, like I know Bonfire of the Vanities ate it, and Hook and Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula, are not the best of those people's filmographies, but whatever those guys were trying to do, Peter Guber and John Peters, of like, this is the last thing I'll say, but just like
for the whole podcast,
with the strike being done, and the main complaint, the WGA started, not the main complaint, the observation that I started most recognizing towards the end was like people were like, oh, before, during strikes, they could move quicker and faster because the people who ran the studios and the producers, they all loved movies deep down. And so they had an impulse and a drive to want to get back to making movies. Now you're in a situation where the people who are making the decisions, this is 0.05 on a spreadsheet of a corporation that could care very little. It's just like one little detail on a spreadsheet. And so what do they care? Right. They're hoping that things will financially turn their way. But it means like, there's no like, bless you, Gesundheit. There's no movie lovers really anymore who are like running studios and making the decisions. So Peter Guber making like movies like Bonfire of the Vanities, Hook, Dracula, they're all insane. They're not particularly good, but I just like love the like, let's roll the dice on this like huge crazy thing. I do feel like it's a little, even if the movies aren't so good, I am nostalgic for that time
because
like it just doesn't, that scope of cuckoo doesn't exist.
This
anymore.
Movie exemplifies the peak of that. And
yes.
I think this is why I love this movie. And I do love this movie.
I love it too.
But
first-timer.
I don't know if it's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm pretty sure it's not. But I love this movie, and I don't love it in the way that I say, like, oh, I love this, is so bad, it's good, I love it. It's such an oddball and such its own movie because obviously it's drawing heavily from the past, but with such a influx of Coppola's kind of, I think maybe he's thinks he has a steady hand, but doesn't have as steady a hand as he may think, although he's still so good at setting up shots. It's almost Spielbergian in the sense of all the little things going on background to foreground and stuff. And
yes.
There's no movie like this. There's no movie like this.
Yeah, and true that.
I saw this in the theater. I want to say like opening night in Westwood, we went to some big thing and it wasn't like I had the foresight to do it. Some friends kind of got me on board to go. And I remember seeing it and going like, I don't think that was good because Keanu Reeves himself has said that he was not good. He was exhausted, and he's not. He's a great actor. I love Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
It's one of the worst performances I've seen on this podcast of the films we've covered.
On this podcast, or maybe in cinema. Yeah, he's beloved now, rightfully so.
Yeah, and he's done some of the best performances, but he's got to be in his wheelhouse. And this,
he's gotta
this is neither wheel nor house. This,
he's got to be in his Reeves house.
Yeah, he is outside in the elements, and the wheel has not been invented yet.
He's like a guy on a horse going through the snow, charging up to a castle right now with a no neck brace.
No neck brace.
I don't know why anybody would wear a neck brace.
No neck brace, Reeves. But so some of the performances aside, and even when the performances aren't bad, I think you got Keanu Reeves in the bad category. I think Winona Ryder is tiptoeing in there a little bit, but you've got Anthony Hopkins and Gary Oldman doing such different things. One of them so over the top, and one of them kind of underplayed a little bit, almost purposefully phoned in a way. He's doing his Van Helsing character. That's not, it's not bad. And I don't think he's phoning it in, but he is doing a kind of stilted Germanic delivery that is so different from what Gary Oldman's doing, not just accent wise, but presentation versus representation. And so much is going on.
No. Yeah. I thought that too, with Anthony Hopkins, I appreciated how it was comic. Like there's some really funny things, and he was like the one person who was like bringing some genuinely like
going to stab her in the heart and cut out the breath.
It's
really funny.
So I liked him in that. It did seem like you saying like it seems like him and Gary Oldman have two different performance styles. That gets at kind of like what I was thinking when I was like when I was watching the Anthony Hopkins stuff. It just seemed like, oh, Francis Ford Coppola loves Anthony Hopkins, and he's just going to choose the best take, not just scene to scene from like cut to cut and just like string of, because it feels like a really wild, like the phoned in might be like for me, like the, it doesn't seem like a focused.
It seems like a table read to me, honestly. Like, he's reading it. It feels like he's reading it. He's not.
One part where he's, like, in a scene, he's trying to convince somebody of something and gets a little, like, dead. And then, I don't know, where he just starts talking. Yeah. He's like, I want you to do. And I was like, oh, he's a total, an amazing way, like a theater actor, where you're like, this is feeling dead. What? How do I like, oh, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
This will bring something to the, like.
Do you think any of it was, he's fresh off the success of on Hannibal's Secret Service, or why can't I think of it? Silence of the Lambs.
Hannibal's, yeah.
I think he knows this young upstart Gary Oldman's coming in and is a scene chewer, method actor. Gary Oldman has aged into an actor that I adore. In his early years, a little goes a long way. Well, although I love him in this, don't get me wrong.
Gary Oldman speaks to this. Yeah. When he was doing the Mank interviews, he was like, Anthony Hopkins, he shared an anecdote that Dracula, him and Anthony Hopkins were like two ships passing in the night, where it was like Anthony Hopkins was a recovering alcoholic, UK actor who was getting accolades, and then went through a spell and then cleaned up. And then Gary Oldman said that Anthony Hopkins said to him, like, I see you, me and you, what you're up to right now. Wow. And I think they hit it off for that reason. And Gary Oldman said they both loved mimicry. So they were both like mimics with each other.
But it's funny because, and Gary Oldman was deep into his alcoholic period. He was arrested for a DUI during the making of this film. I had missed some stuff. But
stories of him combating with Coppola when I first heard the on set. And when I first heard that, my jaw dropped, where I was just like, what actor would think they're in that position, not just in their career, but any point in their career, where you would like butt heads with somebody who's like a master, like you would trust what they're up to.
Early Anthony Hopkins performances are almost even more subdued than his older performances, but Gary Oldman is way the opposite. I think it wasn't until Gary Oldman started doing the Batman films where I felt like he kind of took a breath and went, I don't need to do theatrical performances, I need to do film performances. And then he's so subtle as George Smiley and Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. I've just fell in love with him in that movie.
That's funny because you could see it as that's precisely the point where Anthony Hopkins starts adding a little bit more ham.
Yes, yes.
Like Hannibal. It's almost like
the ships crossing in the night as actors.
Yes, yeah. At a second time then. Then Gary Oldman is like, he's like, you know what? I don't need this much ham on my plate. And he kind of pushes the ham off to the side. And Anthony Hopkins is like, I'll take some of that ham.
Yes.
Yep.
I think Anthony Hopkins, too, is like, you're not going to need that much alcohol, my friend. But you're also not going to need that much acting. Then Gary Oldman seems to come full circle. I don't know if you've seen Slow Horses, that it's a British production, but it's on Apple TV. It's mm-hmm. a series of spy novels that I love. And he plays like the opposite of Jackson Lamb, where he's just like it's outspoken, vulgar asshole, but he's so good in that. Mm-hmm. But he's kind of like playing mm-hmm. it up, but in a way that's not scene chewy as much. Mm-hmm. It's just very, he's so confident now. And I think he's also lost his asshole years. Probably that went with the drink too. But everything you read about this and how he and Winona Ryder did not get along, that they started very close and then something happened.
I wonder what happened between these two actors who are both sexy and at their sexual prime that would change things.
I'm such a little prude. I didn't even think about that. Because I just assumed that, what am I thinking?
You've been on enough sets where you're like, those people were really friendly for a while. Yeah. Now they're not friendly. Mm. After a weekend, or my favorite little thing that will happen on a set sometimes is you'll notice like two actors are like, they're kind of flirting with each other. They're into each other. They're crushing on each other. That's cool. That's a nice vibe to be around. Whatever. That's sweet. And then one of the people will have their like spouse come to visit set, or a partner or their kid. Yeah. And then after that, it's just like, nope, this is not reality has come into this set.
They're perfect. Go ahead.
Well, then I'm saying I'm looking at these two people not crushing on each other anymore. What am I supposed to live for?
I know. Yeah. I didn't come to do this job for the job. I came to pruriently watch a proxy relationship happen. The perfect encapsulation of this is that, probably Oldman and Ryder had some kind of hot lust going on, just like their characters did. But did you hear this story that they needed to do reshoots, and so they shot the scene of Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder getting married in the Greek Orthodox Church. They shot that in a Los Angeles Orthodox Church, and the guy that plays the priest was an actual Greek Orthodox priest.
Whoa.
And so they, even though they weren't legally married, I think they went through the whole process of being married before anybody realized it. The priest had basically married them. And so to this day, apparently they text each other and we'll call each other husband and wife, but it's like a very sweet sort of like they didn't mind. And, I don't think anything was going on with them, but you have like this chaste relationship and then this lusty relationship.
That's so funny that, my joke of like, why would anybody want to come and be on set and have the fun of being creative and collaborating if there was nobody around who had a crush on somebody else. I was joking, of course. It's a distraction, and the work is like the most fun thing in the world. So it would be funny to think that like no two people got married on set. That's a distraction. Yeah, Gary Oldman, as far as he goes with his performance and stuff, like I love late latter day Oldman, old man Oldman,
old man,
but I like young man Oldman. Like, and those performances are really, I'd seen parts of Bram Stoker's Dracula, but this was the first time watching it from beginning to end.
Really, I didn't know that. Oh my god! Oh wow!
Yeah.
I've seen this movie countless times.
So,
countless
times.
The River Arches.
There are some line readings that are from the trailer that, have stuck. Do you remember that? I remember seeing the trailer, so much. So, or just moments like him licking the blood.
Yeah.
Oh, and then her Winona Ryder's Get Me Away From All This Death.
Yeah.
I saw that like 500 times in the fall of 1992, even though I didn't see the movie. But My first touch of Gary Oldman was either True Romance or Sid and Nancy.
Mm, yeah, that was mine, Sid and Nancy, and then The Professional.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which he is maybe his chewiest acting.
Yes, it is.
I probably told you about this joke before on the podcast, but I always say when his character takes those pills, yes, you know, and he just like almost starts to convulse and like turn into the Hulk, that those are his acting pills. So he comes in the room all subtle, then he takes the pills and he's like, and the camera's above him and he's like slithering and drooling, and then he's like, I'm ready to act now.
That's
I'm ready
awesome. To act now. If you look at the pills, there's a little tragedy mask and comedy mask on the on the pill. Oh, that's yeah. He but ate one of these.
I feel so comfortable joking about him because he seems to have been a slightly self-professed difficult asshole mm-hmm. at the time. Now, when you watch the special features, like there's little bonus clips for Slow Horses, and it's just him and Kristen Scott Thomas sitting there goofing around, and he's like fat and long-haired and gross-looking now on purpose. You just feel like, oh, he made it. He made it.
He's chilled out.
Yeah.
It's the best.
I mean, he's probably got, I'm sure he's got some
no, that's all you want for somebody.
He also was heavily method on this too. So he was very dejected and morose throughout the whole thing. And I think that's probably another reason why Winona Ryder had a hard time with him.
Yeah. I mean, it is such a funny, conflict of contrast of actors, that it's like not American Western,
yeah,
Keanu Reeves, Winona Ryder pinup people,
right? I know, and purposefully so. They were cast for those reasons,
and no, not just not theater based, not. And this is in a not like acting school based.
No, and not, they were like movie stars, not movie actors.
Yeah, yeah. And they're amazing. Like, Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder together have given me 24 worth of like separate performances that have brought me so much joy in my life. So it's not like they do what they do. It's just funny when it's up against them, like British, Gary Oldman, Anthony Hopkins, like these are like the
even
best
Sadie
actors.
Frost and Richard Grant.
True that. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
Who are so good in this movie. Mm,
without a doubt. Yeah. I know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Richard Grant is interesting too, like what this period was for him.
Oh,
like,
God, I love
The whatever sun shines on somebody after a indie hit, like with Neo and I, and then you're like, in 18 months, you're in The Player, Hudson Hawk, and Bram Stoker's Dracula.
And he wrote the Withnail Diaries, which are just stories of him on his different roles. I think he's a brilliant actor. Oh, yeah. Also L.A. Story. He's amazing in L.A. Story.
That's true.
Too.
Yes, yes, yes,
yes. I think he would make an amazing George Smiley one day, too, or maybe even now.
That's awesome. Yeah. So just weird having those, like, group of, because I think they could all, if they just weren't mixed up sometimes, there's just sometimes where you're like, whoa, we have to go from a Keanu Reeves line reading to a Gary Oldman line reading within like a 10
it's
seconds.
It's crazy. It is so jarring, and I think that doesn't do, he's miscast in this movie and he's not doing a great job, but part of it is that he's, like you said, up against these other people that just makes his acting look all the worse.
I mean, there's a couple of full-on Ted of Bill and Ted readings, like that, like when he first sees him in that Victorian getup, not the first time he's in the getup, but the first time he goes, he's like, he's so young, and it's like ADR, it's like off screen, it's like they use that, it's like, oh, the Circle K, look at
something's afoot at Piccadilly Square.
I mean, when I saw this in fucking sixth grade, when we rented it at a sleepover, I remember hearing him first speak. Okay. And as a 12-year-old being like blown back by like, how is this happening in a movie?
And this was right when he was in Much Ado About Nothing with Kenneth Branagh doing an English accent. Because normally you get English actors playing Americans. This movie is one of those rare cases where there's a fair amount of Americans playing English people. So you got Keanu Reeves, Winona Ryder, Cary Elwes, who made a career.
Cary Elwes in Dracula.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
then
sorry, you said
Tom Waits.
Yes.
And so it is, I think it is a real casting issue. If you put British people in your young British people, and there was no shortage of hot young British people, put Sadie Frost in the Mina.
Okay, I got a hunch. I got a theory about actors in Coppola pre and post okay.
Okay, this probably goes along with Godfather 3 too, because I know Sofia exactly. Coppola was what she was, but I'm not convinced Winona Ryder would have been good casting good, for that yeah. movie either.
Well, and around that time too is he's not working to get Robert Duvall back for Godfather right. Part 3. He's like, Robert Duvall wants a certain amount.
Yeah.
Francis Ford Coppola says no. Now, he replaced Harvey Keitel with Martin Sheen on Apocalypse right. Now. Coppola is the man, like the master. So like, who am I to like, it's just, I don't think anybody would like disagree that he can be, what's awesome about it is his megalomania sometimes. Yeah. Like, and
he seems to be like a benevolent megalomaniac.
Yes.
Or
yeah.
He doesn't seem mean. Or,
no. Right. Right. Right.
Like,
or
cruel or anything.
If anything is, not if anything, it's just like he has extreme sensitivity. You hear how he talks about act. Like, I think when he reached a certain point of success, he thought he could cast, his abilities as a director were so great, which they were, that he could cast anybody and make it work. Because he did it with Apocalypse Now, maybe, or had done it in the past. And like, so I think it was like, yeah, I know Keanu Reeves isn't right, but he looks, from that era, we can make it. He's photogenic. He's box office, non-poison.
But just imagine you put Jude Law in that role. And Sadie Frost, and they're married.
Even for the tax write-off, you'd think you'd want to use like these actor.
Jude Frost and Jude Law.
Jude Law would be really
great. Sadie Frost, because they ended up married. I don't know if they were at this time. So there would have been some real chemistry there. That would have been incredible.
Yeah, because what is that character? That is really good, because Jude Law is, you feel like there's darkness in him. Like, you can feel that. Like, so, because that guy has to basically, that's what's a little, Jonathan, the Keanu Reeves character, is a little left wanting with that, is like the, his big moment should be like when he's realizing like his wife is having like secret daydreams about Dracula, and he's in her thoughts. And when
we've all been there,
and when he sees her, he like in that he's, and she's like, I want to go to him. He's calling to me. And he's like, no, stay with me. Like that more, it's not even just a performance thing. It's like an understanding of the emotion behind that. Like that would be Jude Law having a sense of darkness, I think, would understand in that moment, like what that is. That like is super a crazy moment. And you understand then, like, where he's like, well, fuck this Dracula guy, I'm gonna go kill it. Like what he's doing.
Exactly. Ralph Fiennes would have been amazing.
Oh, hey, and he also has to be beautiful.
Yes.
No, like Ralph Fiennes. Like,
I was looking at the like casting what ifs on IMDb, so take it with a grain of salt, but unfortunately they were all kind of in the Keanu mold. There were some better ones, but like Christian Slater was in there, and it's just all these hot American movie stars.
You know, it would have been good,
because
you say Christian Slater, and it made me think of how he replaced in Interview with a Vampire, another vampire.
Oh, right.
River Phoenix.
Oh,
River Phoenix also, I think, would have been fully dedicated method style to nailing an accent, understanding that world.
Absolutely. And Johnny Depp was apparently going to play good the role. Too. That would have been better.
Then with Winona Ryder, then it becomes like a real triangle. Of
which
like,
you need. You absolutely need.
I mean, that's like the whole time, there's almost a confusion of like, is she with Dracula now? Like, because I would be with that little like red muscles. Set. I love his slim, good body, red armor muscles.
I love that
suit.
With the bat head. I love that. We'll get
lots
into the look
looks.
Of this, because it's nothing like your grandfather's Dracula,
you know,
which is amazing.
Should we take a Bram Peters?
A Bram Stoker?
Oh my God, that's so good. A Bram Stoker's Dracula break? Yeah. Yes, please.
We'll be right back.
With Gorley and Rust.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, Paul, it's mm-hmm. that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, what's the catch?
Yeah, but after talking to them, it all made sense, right? Because there isn't one!
You got me!
Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt.
You are right, my friend.
And they cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you and to all their users.
I'm living in a cell phone dead zone, but not anymore thanks to Mint Mobile. You can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages.
Because Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
Uh-huh, and you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number, isn't that convenient, along with all your existing contacts.
Ditch those overpriced wirelesses with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month.
Yeah, so to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's my last name, R-U-S-T.
That's mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's your last name, R-U-S-T.
So cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's me.
New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I just want to say as we close this ad out, there were no edits. We nailed this.
We nailed it.
It's like we were on a Mint Mobile phone call.
Beautiful.
With Gorley and Rust.
We're back.
We're back. Now, Matt, you said a couple of times here that you love this movie, and I love it too. Now, what are the aspects that you love about it? Because I have to imagine there are aspects that I love too.
Yeah, I think it might be a little bit of a the thing I love about it the most is that I can't put my finger on it exactly. Mm-hmm. Other than it's really easy to say how much I appreciate all of the old-fashioned mm-hmm. effects, the kind of heightened sets that aren't very realistic and the like shadow puppetry. I saw this when I was 19 and it affected me just for whatever reason. I really liked it. I'd never read Dracula, so I immediately got the book. I loved it. It was my favorite book for a long time, even though it's very different than this movie, the book is, but this movie's the closest anyone gets to that book. But my understanding is they call it Bram Stoker's Dracula not because it's so faithful to the book, which is what you would believe when you're going to see it, but because they didn't want Universal to sue them.
Wow.
Yeah. Because Universal had the rights to like this, that
to the Bella.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But Dracula, the novel was, you know,
so it's like a
game.
Public domain loophole.
Yeah, it's odd. So originally they were going to just call it D. And then Dracula, the Untold Story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Bram Stoker's Dracula. And so then I got this kind of picture book from the movie that just had a lot of behind the scenes photos and stuff.
Oh, cool.
I was very, very into that. There was a comic book. Actually, Brantley sent us this as well, mm-hmm. but I had this. It was like, I think a 4-issue comic book of the movie, almost shot for shot. It's illustrated by Mike Mignola, who was one of my favorite comic artists. Uh-huh. And it's so good. And then when Brantley sent it today, I feel like I'm going to go back and read that. And I don't know why I love this movie. I think because it's such a feast for the eyes. And then it like takes you out with some of its bad acting and some of its good overacting. But then again, the whole presentation of this movie is so theatrical that it doesn't draw you in. It's like it forces you out because you want to be in it so much. So it's like the reverse of a push and pull where you're like, I'm so bored, I'm going out. No, you're like, I'm so interested, I'm going in, but it keeps going like, oh, you want in? Yeah. You can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
And I wonder
if that's the theater lover in you.
Maybe.
Theater lover in me too. That's the idea the seams, that you're seeing it and it's not necessarily about the full absorption. It's about this kind of like push and pull of like admiration
and artifice and,
for the detail, the technique or something. Like I know in the same way you're sitting with a group of people looking at a wall, but it,
well, the first time I saw it, I don't think I loved it. Mm-hmm. And it was like subsequent viewings where it really kind of spoke to me. And I think because I also was looking at all the effects and you're able to go, I think I know how that's done. Mm-hmm. And not only were they using mostly in-camera effects, they were using a lot of things that were effects magicians would have used at the time of the story taking place in 1897. So it's the invention of the camera and you're using that, but also smoke and mirrors, literally smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. And to use like contemporary craftsmen and technology to create old school effects is so, I don't know. It's like bewitching. And I mean, I love it.
Yeah. For me, it's the thing of this movie is that is the like endless visual invention and surprises. And the fact that it is all in camera, all like, It's just like, it's breathtaking. And the costumes and the
production. I would love to production. See it on the big screen again.
Yeah, I know. Because you saw it in Westwood.
Yeah.
You with a group of people on opening weekend and stuff. Yeah, when I saw it, we rented it at a sleepover. And it's so funny, when I was watching it now, I hit the scene that I remember when we were in fifth or sixth grade watching it on video. A boy sleepover, of course. A boy girl sleepover. No,
just Paul and a bunch of girls.
It wasn't like a hangout. It was like so and so's having a sleepover at their house, and we're watching. We've rented this R-rated movie, and you know, that
pretty spicy for youngsters.
It was. I mean, that's why we wanted to see it. You know, we had heard things. I mean, my teacher, the one who said, consenting adults takes a while to start, but the person who rented the movie told her it takes a while to start, but once it does, it's good. And I have to agree. That's what she said to us fifth graders. She was the one who told us. Now, I know a lot of people are going to see this new Dracula movie. It's satanic. Am I pronouncing that right?
Uh-huh.
Satanic.
Satanic.
And there's nudity and violence, and it's anti-God. Like, we were like, whoa. And I remember I said, my sister saw it last weekend in the theater, and I don't know, I felt like I had to share that. I would share that now to you. I'd be like, my sister saw it in the theater. But I remember I came home, and I was like, so-and-so, Mrs. So-and-so was like really upset about Bram Stoker's Dracula. And I mentioned that Amy saw it. And I remember my mom being like, you don't have to be going and telling the teacher. Like, everybody
our
just
family
saw,
secrets.
Yeah, it just seemed like Bram Stoker's Dracula was like radioactive in our town. Wow. So it had this like allure.
Wait, but this teacher was fine with consenting adults.
That's
but
the most bonkers part of this. Like, when I finally watched, so I watched Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula, way before I ever saw consenting adults. I saw that when I moved out to California. I'm like, I'll watch this movie. And then it's about like wife swapping via sexual assault. Like,
the teacher was like, at no time does Dracula pull out a mini Uzi and start blasting these suburban homes.
I mean, it speaks to whatever culture I grew up in, that like, as long as Kevin Spacey might have been his character, like, sexually assaulting people and conniving his way to the top, as long as he doesn't breathe fire onto a crucifix,
yes,
the movies are like, there was right. something about I its that, anti-godness
your
or something.
Mom too was like, you don't have to tell her that, meaning like, no one should know our family's going to see this satanic movie in this community.
Yes. I mean, my mom's the best. Yeah. And so it wasn't like, you know, she was, I didn't make it sound like she was like clutching her pearls, but it was more just like, yeah, exactly. It was like, oh, okay. Well, whatever.
I can edit it out, but I truly didn't understand what you said.
Okay. It's okay. Cause I haven't said anything bad. And who cares? I love this teacher.
I don't think the name was intelligible. Do you want me to edit that out or keep it?
No, it's okay. Okay. Right? It's too complicated with the live stream. And
well, we can't do anything about the live stream. They're going to go straight to this teacher's doorstep and give her hell. I truly didn't understand what you said.
Okay.
Okay.
And you know what? No, we got to go. I'm going to clap. Okay. And then all we'll do is when the name is said, you just have to go drop the name, the last name, and we can talk all this. You don't have to worry about any of these cutting stuff
together. Okay, but let's clap so I know where to go.
Yeah.
Hold on. That's just a look inside the process, listener.
Oh my gosh. And do you need a sound that was inserted over her name
yes,
here?
Yes, please.
Okay.
So they're going to listen for 2 minutes, first. And then they're going to go, what the hell was that? And I like that.
Now you got your answer.
Okay.
And the people in the live stream, oh my gosh, they're probably just searching now, going back, digging up, kicking up rocks, searching for breadcrumbs. Yeah. We got to find that name.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, well.
Wow, what a journey.
That was a journey to the stars.
I don't know where that leaves us, but
oh, so when I saw
I feel satisfied.
We read it in the sleepover, okay. And it was like built up. Oh my God, this is the movie that Mrs. doesn't want to. That was a live one. Doesn't want to us to see. We watched it, and everything that I love about it now, that it's basically like an art film, or it's like an experimental film.
Yeah.
I saw the scene today that I remember. A group of 12-year-old boys be like, what the fuck is this? When Tom Waits is in the cell and there's like 30 minutes left of the movie and he's like, but you promised me I'd live forever. Yeah. We're like, we thought this wasn't. It's like that scene in The Simpsons where they're all stoked to see Bart and Fink.
Is Dracula pound for pound, movie to movie, the most underserved literary character of all time? I love this movie, but there's never been, because there's millions of vampire movies, and there's never really been a good Dracula. There's the Frank Langella one, there's the George Hamilton one, getting back to Francis Ford Coppola and some recasting.
Leslie Nielsen.
Yes.
You're not a Lugosi head.
No, I am, but I just mean literary Dracula, because that's not...
Gotcha.
There's like never really been... Oh, and then there's recently this movie, The Last Voyage of the Demeter, too, which is just about the ship's voyage, which I hear that movie's not really good, which is a bummer, because that is probably my favorite chapter in that book.
Damn.
And another thing,
I mean, I loved in this movie the vignettes, the little, like, you can have just a moment of, like, going and telling a story for 3 minutes. That vignette of the ship was amazing. Yeah.
The other thing about this book is it's written every chapter is someone's journal entry. So the narrators are the characters. And this was the movie that got me reading, which I'm sad to say, I was 19 when I saw this, and I think I could count the books I'd read on one hand. I'd read The Last Starfighter novelization, Last Crusade novelization. Now that I think of it, any movie with Last, probably Last of the Mohicans. I don't know. But after this, I read Dracula and I was so in love with it that I just started reading a lot of classics. And,
damn.
And to this day, I go through definite periods, but right now I'm like in such a voracious reading period. Mm-hmm. And it makes me so happy. I'm going all through the Le Carre's of the George Smiley books
right now.
Yeah. And I just,
oh man,
some of them I've already read, but I'm just doing that and then following them up with the movies where they exist. And
I love it. Like Francis Ford Coppola made you go get a library card.
I just love reading a book and then watching a movie, even if the movie's not good, but mm-hmm. to just see a version of it visually is so satisfying.
A vision of something that you had in your head first. And
yeah.
Then, yeah.
And this, cool. this was the opposite, but mm-hmm. I was able to read the book with those. I do love reading the book with the movie actors in mind.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, there's two things there that I wanted to expand on with you. The him doing special effects and stuff. Well, first of all, we wanted to ask, like, the Dracula vampire story. So you read the book then?
Mm-hmm.
And when you read it, what hit are you getting? Like, what about the Dracula story, the vampire story is like?
Well, I was thinking I was really a little confused because all you ever hear through your lifetime is like, of all the scary characters, Dracula is the like most sensual and lusty.
Mm-hmm.
So when you read Bram Stoker's Dracula, especially after having seen this movie, you're left a little cold.
It's not as lusty as the movie.
No, and there's no prologue, no past lives, mm-hmm. none of that. I mean, Dracula has been alive, undead all this time, mm-hmm. but he was never married to a princess that ends up being Mina Harker.
Yeah.
And there's no sex in it, you know?
Huh.
I think there's probably like a sense of that fin de siècle sort of contemporary England morals of the time that if you read between the lines, but as someone who's reading this in the 90s, I'm just going like, soap operas are way more sexy than this, you know, but mm-hmm. there is a, mm-hmm. there's just a rich world. And I was so into like English culture and especially like historically English culture to kind of just go London to uh-huh. have this ghoulish man and they're on the hunt for him. There's a lot more to the guys, the band of these suitors that I really liked. And I guess with this movie too, they sent the suitors all off to bond. And part of that wasn't intended was Gary Oldman set himself back from them because he wanted to seem alien to them. So I love Quincy, who's at Holmwood, and mm-hmm. I can't remember the doctor's name, but I just love their little trio and how they're rival suitors, but they're working for the greater good and they're good to each other. And I've always loved that.
Yeah.
And that's why I just wish Harker was an actor of their three caliber. Cause I really like Cary Elwes and Billy Campbell and of course, Richard E. Grant, who's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the love story was more put in the foreground with this adaptation than in the book. Right.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember if there's even much of a contemporary love story when Dracula gets to London with, I forget what it is, but it's nothing like this.
I mean, the visual stuff is amazing. And I could watch this movie like truly like 500 more times just to take in like, and that's probably my favorite thing about Coppola movies is like the sumptuousness, like, One from the Heart has like a lot of those like in camera stuff. And then, you know what this movie reminds me is kind of like, I'd never seen Dracula from beginning, but when I watched it, I was like, it feels like One from the Heart plus, did you ever see his like art film version of Rumblefish?
No, it was a separate edit.
No. I'm sorry. He adapted Rumblefish, but it's an art movie. It's like really weird and experimental. But the Dracula feels like a marriage of like those two, because also One from the Heart is about like love and a love that's like fated to be. And but when I was watching like the movie, I did think like, yeah, visually I love it. Any love story that's like a love that transcends time. And yeah. I shouldn't say never. It's just rare for me I can't get into
cosmic love.
Big sweeping stories of love stories.
Yeah.
They're just like, I don't know, because they don't necessarily focus on particulars, because if they did, then that would start robbing it of its kind of like grandness feeling. Yeah, if you saw how they like bicker. But then it got me feeling I'm a little bit of like am I a Scrooge of romantic stories, because in movies in general, like my favorite movies aren't really.
Well, I don't think these type of things play as well today, because we are a lot more liberal in our romance in real life now. But in a Victorian era, you're not even allowed to touch a person until you get married. So it's all of it is a myth until you experience it. So to read or see something like this, where it's star-crossed and cosmic and takes place through time, is just removed enough that real romance is removed. Yeah. So you might as well just daydream about it all. Well, you see it and you can't identify with it, because you go, why don't I just call up?
Yeah. Well, as long as it's all eras too, the era that I like was like, oh, there's something different about this coming out in 1992 than it is now. Like the idea of you find a love that it's about the transfusion of like blood and fluid that then like commits you in body, but also your own body. Like there's times that they refer to the venereal disease, right? And he says civilization and syphilization have both run together, parallel or whatever he says. But like the, it's just like the AIDS was at its peak in 1991 when this was being made, in 92 when it released. This was like when it was probably at the most forefront of people's mind about like, it's an epidemic. How are we treating it best? So that feels like it's in there somehow. Just like the focus on like,
I think so,
blood, exchanging blood, and then how that immediately sets you on a course for like, your body's decomposing.
Yeah, close-ups of microscopic platelets and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to be so jabberjaw on this one, but I have...
The jabberjaw.
Three quick things. So
please.
Four quick things.
Please.
There's a cut scene from this movie that was deemed too gross where Dracula forms into a giant blood clot and then just like explodes or something.
Oh, interesting.
And then Mina's also in like a room filled with blood. There's some like shining feel on that.
Yeah.
Also, this movie got me really into Dracula, so I started reading about Vlad Tepes, who's Vlad the Impaler.
Damn!
Which, if I'm not mistaken, Bram Stoker's Dracula is not that historical character. So that was a real person who then later the Dracula myth, I think, got attached to him because he would impale people. Mm-hmm. And you know, Dracul means son of the dragon, and he was like his family. His dad was Dracul, and they were all this order of the dragon, and that's what that all means. And I was like obsessed with that for a while. Then, I forgot one. I knew I'd forget one.
That was one of the four?
Yeah, that was two of the four.
Two of the four. Okay,
now. I forgot the third.
I bet it'll come when you do the fourth.
The other one is unrelated, that when you mentioned Leslie Nielsen, just... The title, Dracula, Dead and Loving It, I never thought about how funny a title that is. Dracula, Dead and Loving It.
Yeah, it is really good. It should have been the title of Bram Stoker's Dracula if they were trying to make sure they were legally clear from Universal. Just call it Dracula, Dead and Loving It. What was the fourth? The third of the fourth? Was it a bridge to the first two to Leslie Nielsen?
What else were we talking about right up to that?
Coppola's movies, AIDS, blood.
I'm going to have to let it go and have faith that it will
but
come
But there
back.
Is that stuff of like, he cries blood onto the letter.
Yeah.
Her teardrops turn to jewels. Like, yeah, when you mentioned that he turns into a blood clot, it made me think of like, oh, all the different transformations that do occur, like, fluidly.
Yeah.
The thing I was going to say just about what Coppola was doing at this time and what I think is particularly like charming now when you watch it, or not charming like in a quaint way, it's just like in a, charming's not the word, like a, wow, there's so much passion on screen, is like, you know, 1991 is like Terminator 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you got this digital, the first like digital robot dude. And then 1993 is Jurassic Park. And after that, it's like,
it's early yet to be going to practical effects as quaint.
Yeah. But yeah. In the same way that I'll watch movies from 1990 to 92 that have practical effects that are mind-blowing because they've reached the full peak before they were jumped over. So like RoboCop 2, Gremlins 2, they're really at like a Terminator 2. Yeah. But it's really even more amazing to watch it now and be like, oh, it was right in between stuff really radically changed.
Yeah.
Like it thought it was being, oh, look at what the history of special effects in movies is like now. But like, they didn't even know what was going to happen over the next 25 years to even know how that would be extra clean. Did you think of your...
No.
Aw.
It's lost.
It has crossed and been lost to ocean of time.
Because I was going to say with the love story aspect... one of my favorite movies is Shampoo, and that's a love story, so I shouldn't. But on my end with Dracula, I like the world and the atmosphere, particularly of this movie, but of vampires and Draculas and Draculas, but I don't I can never like transport myself into the vampire or the victim, like the whatever the
I get
metaphor
that.
Is.
Right.
I can always admire it, but I can't find my in.
I think also vampires and zombies have suffered the like they've been assimilated too much into film culture now. So with Twilight and all the post 2000 zombies movies, like zombies probably peaked with 28 Days Later for me. Mm-hmm. And then it became fair game for everyone and they're everywhere. And I just couldn't be more bored by a genre.
Yeah. That Dawn of the Dead remake too, around the 28 Days Later. That
to
was
the point
like
where
peak.
It's ruined it for me where I don't even want to go back and see the good ones. And that's on me, but I'm just saying, I'm just so disinterested in zombies. I run that risk with vampires because they're just kind of like, they've also been like memed to an inch of their lives too, but
yeah,
this is the last vampire thing I think I care to see.
Yeah. Were you in an Interview with the Vampire?
I mean, I saw it and it's, it was awful even at the time, but I really enjoy watching it, you know?
Yeah. Cause that movie feels like it's about, it's
I think
funny,
that
like
was
the other
the ruination that began the ruination of it.
Yeah,
those Anne Rice books. Yeah.
Well, the metaphors of like that it's the lust for blood is the lust for the body and sex and stuff, and but also pleasure. Like, so it either seems like they're movies about that, or like an Interview with the Vampire seemed like it was like a drug movie or something. Like, oh, you get addicted to blood and your whole life is tortured about like having to but the, cause I was going to say with the vampire story, being that way, I don't know, like, it's too, like, sexy. Like,
it's too, like,
vampires are too sexy for me.
But don't you think they're a little try-hard sexy? Is that the thing where it's also a little bit like, ooh, isn't this sexy? When for me, maybe you and me, we find subtlety a little bit more sexy than wearing your sexiness on your sleeves, especially with the metaphor for, like, orgasming on drinking blood.
It's
a little on the nose, let's say.
I mean, I guess I did like the part, the stuff of, like, in this, that, like, Dracula is, like, the worst ex-boyfriend from high school who's still into you that you could ever have.
Yeah.
And it's like the that level of
it's
that,
teenage shit.
Yeah. I can see, like, that's so funny that it's just like, everybody just cool out for a fucking moment, guys.
You do this whole movie, you want to go, Mina, Lucy, Mina, any one of those three suitors is a better choice than Dracula or Jonathan.
Yeah.
You've got
even
a doctor.
Van Helsing.
You've got a doctor. You've got some kind of landed gentry playboy. I don't know. And, Texan. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, I think you should choose the doctor.
It sounds like a newlywed game panel or a dating game panel.
Yeah. I think your choice is you start with the doctor. If that doesn't work out, you go to Cary Elwes. Then you go to Billy Campbell. Then I guess you go to Jonathan, and then if you have to... No, then you go Van Helsing, then you go Renfield. Then you go,
Renfield, then you go number six.
No one in their right mind would want to be with that Dracula, I guess, but maybe he's got some kind of
chemistry. The Gary Oldman Dracula?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I think people would want to shack up with that.
Teenagers, yeah, but you want to marry that guy?
No. He's the F.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, he's the F.
Or the K.
Yeah, good luck.
You're going to need a steak, buddy, and a sharp sword.
Yeah, some garlic.
I love the beheadings in this, too. They're, like, so clean and swift. And then, like, the artifice head, it falls. I love how vampires look, all the trappings and stuff. They are everywhere. They're, like, ubiquitous. Give me more Wolfman, baby.
And Frankensteins, not these I, Frankenstein, Aaron Eckhart shit. And I do want to revisit Kenneth Branagh's Frankenstein, but
I just
never
love
had a
Wolfman
proper...
that it's like a regular person.
Yeah.
You can't control at night what you do, and then you wake up and you're like, what did I do? I don't even mean in terms of like drinking or going out and partying. I just mean like... you're usually two different people and you're trying to rest. Like, that is such a... And then, why hasn't anybody done, like... Not since American Werewolf in London has done, like, a really cool transformation scene that's, like, Cronenberg level, where you actually see...
It'd be all CG
makeup,
now.
But it'd be awesome if somebody did actual makeup, fleshy, like, tufts of fur, like, coming out of skin pores.
Remember when
like, pores opening up and thick tussles of fur coming out would be amazing.
When Dracula shows his palms and he's got white furry palms.
In this?
Yes. Did you not see
I missed that.
No, when he hands
he's been
to John,
whacking off
I
too
think
much.
So. I think that's
it.
And he's blind.
But then to your Frankenstein, I also like Frankenstein's stories.
Or Blue
too.
Lagoon. Creature from the Blue Lagoon.
No. Black Lagoon.
Yes. That's a different creature.
I'll tell you about the creature from the Blue Lagoon. Brooke Shields. Now that's a creature I'd invite into my Blue Lagoon.
The real scary creature from the Black Lagoon is any director is going to put children of that age topless.
Randall Kleiser?
Known pedophile?
No. I was just saying he directed that movie.
Yes, I know. Auga. What else? Anything else about this movie? I didn't write notes because I just wanted to take it all in.
The
costumes are fucking incredible.
You know what? I wrote mine on pencil. I think I basically said all I had to say, but I'll scan these real quick. What did you say is fantastic?
The costumes.
Yes.
Unbelievable. The makeup.
Oh, the makeup is so good. I looked down. There's all his different... The looks in terms of fashion are amazing, but the looks in terms of old man makeup is like off the chain.
Yeah.
The wrinkles.
I know. And
what's your favorite
not
look?
So stiff. I think it's the first one where he's got that kind of, I don't even know how you would describe that.
The butt head.
The butt head with the long ponytail.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's amazing.
Yeah. Cause the skin is good. And then the hair and then the outfit, the like kimono.
I always remember, cause I always loved The Simpsons, but I never really watched it regularly. But there was one episode, doesn't he go visit Mr. Burns at his house and he's got that
of
hair.
Of course. And two really great jokes of that. When the shadow does, you see the shadow doing different things. It like pulls out a yo-yo and does a little yo-yo trick, the shadow. That's really funny. And a true LOL, anytime you watch the episode, Homer puts a stake into like Smithers or no, Mr. Burns, chest. Like they open up the tube and they put it, and he goes, and he puts it in, and Lisa goes, "Dad, that's his crotch."
Is that a Treehouse of Horror?
Yeah.
I gotta watch that.
Well, The Shining, season. When we talked about The Shining, the shinning is,
I've never seen that.
Top notch.
Do that with Glenn. Post haste.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Speaking of watching fun stuff with your daughters, I did it this morning, dude. I showed the bar segment from Gremlins to Mary.
Oh.
I mean, the thing what'd I've you told think? You, I think, is like the peak of mood. Like, and not being.
Yeah.
Like, it's.
Yeah.
The happiest I am is
it's
in those 5 minutes.
The decline of Western civilization.
Yes. After that, it was all downhill.
Yeah.
Because we were watching The Amazing World of Gumball, this cartoon that she likes, and they did a Gremlins riff, like a spoof. And she dug it. She called me into the room and was like, "Hey, I want you to see this episode because I think you'd like it and I like it." And I was like, "Well, they're spoofing. They're making references to Gremlins. Would you want to see a scene from Gremlins?"
Did she know what Gremlins were? She just felt you?
She knows what they are because she'll see Gizmo on toy counters in toy stores. And now there's this new Gizmo show on Max that they're advertising a lot. So I think she sees that too.
So how did she like the bar scene?
She loved it. She had a big smile on her face. The jokes were still landing. I can tell when it's a pity. I'm going to make... I don't want to hurt Dad's feelings. Yeah. It was a genuine, like... So, I'm stoked. I mean, when she's at the age that she can see a blender a gremlin blow up in a microwave and die in a blender, then
oh
she'll see
God,
it.
Oh, God, that's great.
But what did you... you and Glenn watching Simpsons, that's fun.
We will. We haven't, but we will.
Because it's a cartoon that's
funny. I probably have shown her a couple things ahead of her time than I should, but we're mostly into Studio Ghibli, but like the real like sweet ones, like Kiki's Delivery Service and Totoro and Ponyo.
What does she think when she sees those?
She saw Ponyo in the Kiki's theater. Kiki's Delivery Service. Yeah. And now she's really starting to take to Totoro. Her birthday's coming up and I bought her a stuffed Totoro and, yeah,
I shared this story on the live stream, so forgive me, guys, for resharing it, but I'll tell everybody here. When I went to Matt's house yesterday to do the Cozy Awards, I saw Glenn outside, and she was so cute, so funny, and she stuck her tongue out at me, and I stuck my tongue back out at her, and then I used my tongue to touch my nose, you know, the tip of my nose with the top end of my tongue, and I show Glenn, and I'm like, "Glenn, can you stick your tongue out and touch your nose?" And she sticks out her tongue, and with her fingertip, she touches the end of her nose. Yeah. Oh my classic. God! So
classic great. Joke, and she didn't even know it was.
But it was she was had a smile on her face because it was like, "Hey, we're doing fun stuff. It's all fun talking about." I can't. She's turning two.
Yeah, she turned two.
That's perfect. That's so great. Both of our daughters have birthdays in October, and they're very lucky because you get the atmosphere, the trappings of Halloween.
I know.
I think that's everything that I had to say. Definitely wanted to know your fave look. I do think mine is the top hat and glasses.
I remember
the
seeing
90s.
It and going like those purple sunglasses. Honestly, this movie's batshit crazy, and that was the one thing that took me out of the movie.
I love it. And there's a part later when it gets like knocked off or something, and he becomes a demon with that haircut, and it looks like
when
Danzig.
He's crying. Yes, yes.
Like that when is he's Glenn crying Danzig,
and he's,
yes.
Because he looks like he's wearing like a 70s tuxedo and he's been stood up at prom, but yes! He's an old, decrepit man.
Yes. That's perfect. The only thing I was going to say was whatever, going back to the last thing about this year, this era, this time, you were going to Westwood Theater, mm-hmm. having a great time.
Yeah.
The further we get away from it, that 1992, Matt, I'm starting to think of it as a true pivot point. It's like a year after Desert Storm. Mm. And I think something happened there where people were like, what was that? Were we all sheep? We're not sheep. What the fuck are we doing here? Because yeah. after that, it's just like an explosion of the counterculture becoming mainstream. But you could also just say, hey, 92 is when Bill Clinton's elected. He's the first baby boomer in the office. And they are fully at the controls now.
Right.
Like,
and still are. That's what's fucking crazy.
That's true. The thing is, though, once you put your punctuation mark on, like, you know, the most boomery movie is like Oliver Stone's JFK for me, like Fall of 91. Yeah. Like, once you kind of like, it's almost like once your generation becomes president, you automatically are lame. Because everything after that, like, ushered in all this new stuff that they didn't like, you know? Like, Bill Murray hated Chris Farley and Adam Sandler, I guess. Just like, like, oh, right, this old guard fucking hated this new guard.
Yeah.
So whatever this time period, when I go back to it and watch movies, it's just, it seems like it's a really, oh, but it's also when Reservoir Dogs and Alien 3 came out.
Yeah.
So you're seeing this kind of like dying of the film brats, but seeing something really new, like Nevermind is replacing Dangerous, Michael Jackson's Dangerous on the Billboard charts at number one. You being 19, I'm like, I wish I could have been there.
Paul,
like that would have been really
a better conveyance of this, because when you say that Nevermind replaces Dangerous, to me it was Van Halen's For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge is simply replacing Van Halen's OU812.
But the promise of whatever, I mean, the Clintons are dorks now, nobody likes them, but like at the time when that summer, that fall, that had, like, you were seeing this probably 2 weeks before he was elected president.
I was just so naive, I think. And you
it didn't
know,
feel
remember
promising.
Remember, I was raised conservatively,
like,
too. So it was all I could do to not vote for Bush, much less appreciate that someone like Clinton, regardless of his current day, you know, we have a way more hindsight on that now. Yeah. His second term, yes, then I was finally there for that to appreciate and
he voted for Dole. He didn't win. So you're like, okay, I got to accept, support my president.
Who I did vote for.
You didn't vote for Dole.
No, I didn't. Oh. I think I actively didn't vote.
You know,
I voted, but not for president. Or no, I know. I wrote in my theater history teacher.
Isn't that awesome?
That's stupid.
No, because I was hoping he'd win. If other
oh,
people
he was
wrote
Bill
him
Clinton.
In. Yeah,
Bill Clinton was my theater history teacher.
I cast my first vote in 2000. And you want to know who I voted for?
2000. Nader?
Nader. Yeah. Of course.
See, you're already so finger on the, like, the...
No, I'm already annoying. And pretentious.
I did vote for Bush my first time, his first. Well, Glenn's got a magic microphone.
Yeah, because she's hearing you voted for Bush's first. Or what?
Not George W. Bush. I voted for in 88 was my first election.
Okay.
I voted.
A different thing. Okay.
No, Herbert Walker.
And I would never, even if you voted for George W. Bush, you know, I stopped talking to you. Guys, sorry, politics is politics. I just want to say the asterisk to me voting for Nader. I voted in Iowa. That year went blue.
Right.
And so it's not like my vote to Nader meant Bush won Iowa. And, right. Okay.
Look, take a okay. break. We're finding our feet politically in those times, everyone.
So what was it? For me, it was Nader, W. Bush, Obama, Trump. Yep. That's my voting record. Just wanted to get that out there.
W. Bush?
I'm kidding. The Obamas were true. Two Obamas. But I was mixing it up, throwing a curveball when I threw a fast and then down the pike.
Starting in 88, it went Trump, Trump. All right. I finally didn't have to write them in. It was amazing. Should we read some Zenos and then
Let's do it. Fun.
Let me bring them up.
No, it was Nader, Kerry, Obama, Clinton.
Okay.
And Biden.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, I just got my wings. Because I stated a voting record that a lot of people probably agree with. That's cool. I could go to heaven now.
Chris Ripley wants a shout out to This Means Ripper from Paul.
Say that again. I'm sorry, buddy.
Just this.
This means Ripper instead of this means this.
Oh, yes.
Means Ripper.
I didn't even put it together.
Thanks, Ripper.
Hi, this goes out to Zach Glenn's brother, Walker Glenn. Must be nice to have your name named after and thing that you use when you're old and can't do what the name of the thing is in the first place.
Yes.
Sick burn.
Okay, just a straight up shout out to
Brandon Mindel.
And then, how about
thanks, Brandon?
A shout out to Izzy for being the good golly Miss Molly Polly to my Matt.
Hey.
That's Jesse Daly sending that out to Izzy.
Jesse Daly.
Oh, guess what? Hello, court's in session because here I am to say Matt Shoebits. You sure bits a lot off more than you could chew. Now, Your Honor, that's just a sample of some of the comedy I like to get into my court brief so as to distract you from bad rulings. Okay, shout out to Daniel Silver. It'd be good if you guys could put this in caps if you want anything so I could find it. I think this person just wants a
good all old, caps. Good sounds like my hat rack.
Fashion shout out. Okay.
Hi, my name is Ryan Fleming, don't you see? And I'm here to shout out Brian Sampson and Delilah.
Ooh, the best. You do the voice when it's best for that name. Brian sounds fantastic.
And this is just a shout out to Brian Garcia.
Brian Garcia, we'll read that later. Thank you.
We do appreciate that. Well, we will say the shorter and more succinct your shout out messages, the better. You'd help us out.
Hey, it's kind of like Paul Simon's body. The shorter, the better.
Matt
and
Overholt.
All caps.
Shout out to Matt Overholt.
Matt Overholt.
Oh, hello, Zeno. Kristen, I got to shout out you especially because right there in the subject title, Zeno, Kristen, and Ozzy from Durham, North Carolina, Southern lawyer, please.
I have to say I come in here today thinking I got to do a ton of work, but I got all my work done because of Kristen. Shout out to you.
Kristen Lozoya brought the clarity.
Yeah, and to Ozzy, and that means I can take the rest of the day off and go sip a phosphated soda down at Dylan's Pharmacy. Well, I don't know.
Dylan's?
I don't know.
I don't want to go there.
I love my mama, Duke.
Oh. I remember this. Okay, now, this is a special shout-out. In fact, we got a couple special shout-outs today, if you'll bear with us. Now, this is Zach Lemon, who has a band called Vague Pains, and he and I had a back and forth just because he was asking us about our music and whatnot and such. But cool. If you can, give Vague Pains a listen on just the way it sounds like it's spelled, Vague, as in the word,
I seem
to have dined on some blood platelets. I'm not a vampire, I'm a southern
yeah,
boy.
Yeah, right.
If I was a vampire, though, I'd be in Anne Rice's interview with the, Deposition of the Vampire. Okay, Vague Pains.
I'd like to see you represent Lestat. Stat.
Vague Pains on Bandcamp.com. Check them out because they got, I really did enjoy the music. So
yeah, wonderful.
Give it a listen.
Okay.
Oh, hey, it's a me, Watto. I'm from Sicily. This will go out to Tyler Florida. And don't forget to pronounce the last syllable of your Parmesan and your prosciutto. Okay. We also got here a new no-no for Janelle Bickle, if you don't mind, Paul.
New no-no. If your name's Janelle Bickle and this sounds like you might be a redneck, it's not. No, Janelle Bickle.
Uh-oh, Watto come again for he to say Kristen is, the most nefarious. Say it with me.
The most nefarious member of Pinhead's court.
one more new no-no for Joel Gattis.
New no-no, Joel Gattis. I got you, Gattis. Gattis and Gott both start with a G. Not now. No. No words ever start with G's. Thanks, Joel Gattis.
And then two more special shout-outs. Listener Ira Marks sent in these young reader graphic novels that take place having to do with classic films like Shark Summer, which takes place in and around the Jaws world, as well as Spirit Week, which is Shining influenced. I haven't had a chance to read them. I just received them, and he and I have had a bit of a back and forth. Seems like a wonderful guy, super talented. Check these out, Spirit Week and Shark Summer.
Ooh, hey, Spirit Week and Shark Summer by Ira Marks. Ira, last name Marcks.
And then finally, I don't know how much detail I can go into about this story, but the wife of a listener of ours wrote in with a truly touching story, and that has a happy ending, but one of our listeners was, I believe, unconscious for a number of weeks, and the prognosis was not good. They, I think, have had a full recovery, but when they awoke, and even though they couldn't speak, Tyler was his name, he motioned for a pen and wrote with Gorley and Rust, The Shining, and wanted to listen to us as he recovered. And
When I got that email, it was...
Truly, truly touching, and I knew you would appreciate that too. So,
thanks, Tyler.
Thank you for sending us. And Tyler, so glad to hear you are doing better, and that we were, no matter how small a part, you know, a part of your recovery.
Because we love you
as hell.
We love you, and we're so glad you're getting better.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for listening. You can be have your name shouted out by subscribing at the Baby Xenomorph level and emailing us at withgorleyandrustpod@gmail.com. What, Paul, was your best kill?
My best kill was... I liked it when they killed Lucy.
Me too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not... she dies a couple times, frankly.
Yeah, so the part where she gets her head chopped up, the final death. And then, that whole sequence of them going down to
good.
I was just looking over my notes to see if there was a couple things. And one of the things was Lucy. It is funny to me how she always wants to kiss the guy in front of his friends.
I know.
And he's uncomfortable both because she's a vampire, but also he's PDAs. I'm not comfortable with them. You are, but I'm not.
You do remember we're living in the Victorian era.
The other thing I was going to say, too, was Sorry.
Take your time.
No.
Checking off things here anyway.
I
will say, while you're looking for that, I can say that.
Please.
As stated, this will come out a week later for you free listeners. You could have gotten it a week earlier, but we will be back on October the 13th on the Patreon feed with Yuppie Nightmare Season 2. And that'll be out a week later on the free feed. So if you want to get on the ground floor of that, the first movie will be After Hours. And join us back then. In the meantime, there are mailbags. And we're going to do a commentary for Halloween 6, both versions at the same time. What other podcast can promise that?
No one.
Yeah.
Not one. I have a question. This is before we rank it or rate it. Why did he become I like Wolfman. I stated that. Mm, yeah. But there's sometimes where he becomes a furry creature. Is that in the book? Or
yeah, I believe it is. He's a wolf. That's how he kills everybody on the Demeter. You don't really see it in this movie, but he... See, I think the thing is the Wolfman invention came along later or was drawn from this. But in Dracula, he is more than just a bat. He's a wolf. I think he can turn into rats. They say it in this.
He does turn into rats.
A mist.
There's a part where all the rats come out. And then that green mist I love too. Yeah. How it goes up under the blanket. How do they do that? Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I'm wondering if the Wolfman legend comes from Dracula. I don't know. But
yeah.
That's interesting. There's a line in this with Anthony Hopkins' voiceover where he's like, contrary to popular belief. You know, because they have to undo all the movie lore that's been done.
Yeah, I was telling my wife about the one that was like contrary to popular belief. Vampires can go out in the daylight. They just don't prefer it. Yes. but the, that scene when the wolf came in and like bit her, I liked it, you know, because it's a wolf and stuff.
And it looked good.
Awesome.
Bat, when he's the bat, looks so good. Too.
Yes. Yeah. All the times he turns into the different creatures. But the way he kind of like the digging into her and that she liked it. I wanted a little bat to fly in. I got to say, I was a little disappointed that there was I know that they were probably working against the cliches of a Dracula movie.
Yeah.
But I got to say, I really missed a little bat flying in and like giving kisses to a girl. Like waking her up. She's like, oh, a bat, and kisses it. But okay, so what are you rating this?
You go first because I just want to see if I'm in left field.
Yeah. Oh, I'll say, hey, guys, guys and gals, ask a few questions on the live stream. When we wrap up here, we'll turn to the screen.
A reminder, if you're a Baby Xenomorph subscriber, you can watch all this being screamed live. Yeah. And we often do a quick little Q&A after the recording.
Yeah. I think I'll give it a 9.
9. Okay. Well, I'm going to come down on mine a little so I don't seem insane and go 12.
12 is good, dude. I love it.
I love this movie.
I loved it too, and I'm glad I got to watch it the full thing for the first time.
That's right.
For whatever reason, watching it at a sleepover in sixth grade wasn't fully conducive to taking in this movie.
You got to go to Westwood when you're in college voting for Bush.
Gary Oldman, he was such a bad boy during this. Remember, he was supposed to host SNL. I remember it got announced on the little ticket before commercial. It said, next week I'll be hosted by Gary Oldman, and then it wasn't him the next by mid next week. It was like Tom Arnold was like
the guest. That's where they
and
went.
Then he came out in the monologue and he said
Gary Oldman did
no or Tom Arnold came out and said, hey, I know it was supposed to be Gary Oldman, but it turns out he hates the show. But I guess Malcolm McDowell, who had had a bad experience during the rough years of SNL, told Gary Oldman not to do it. So he backed out. Yeah.
Wow. I would read a book about Gary Oldman's young life.
Me too. Oh.
Not written by him.
Yeah.
Necessarily. I want one that like just tells all the stories.
Well, what I was going to say was, when we mentioned Sid and Nancy and how I liked him in that, he seemed to kind of have his own little corner, a little spot on the map for him that were like doomed romances. I wonder if you would have thought of casting him as Dracula if Sid and Nancy hadn't come out. Because that is sort of like, you can see a connection. They're like both bad boys that kind of get like a normie girl to come to his dark side, and they both, their names are,
right,
you know, Sid Vicious and Count Dracula, which is so funny when anybody says Count Dracula in a Dracula movie. It's funny. Nobody goes, oh, shit, I got to get out of here. Like he said to Keanu Reeves, he's like, at the very beginning, he's like, and you'll be visiting Count Dracula. And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
For the audience person, that sounds hey, you're going to go visit the creature from the Black Lagoon right now. Okay, sure. I'd do a double feature of Sid and Nancy and Bram Stoker's Dracula. I think that'd be pretty fun.
Check it out.
But thanks for picking this movie, Matt.
My pleasure.
Suggesting it.
We'll be back with some Yuppie Nightmares in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, if you guys are watching, getting ready to watch After Hours 1985, and we'll talk about it.
Bye now.
Bye.
For more Gorley and Rust content, head over to patreon.com/withgorleyandrust to get episodes ad-free and a whole week early. Plus, monthly mailbag episodes and feature-length watch-along film commentaries of your favorite horror classics. That's patreon.com/withgorleyandrust. Email us at withgorleyandrust@gmail.com, and your questions might be featured on a future mailbag episode. With Gorley and Rust theme song by me, Mac Wood, and performed by Townland. You can find us on Instagram as Townland Band, as well as Paul's fantastic band at Don't Stop or We'll Die. And why not rate and review With Gorley and Rust on Apple Podcasts? It'll help us grow the show and keep us trucking through the Jasons and the Michaels, the Leatherfaces and the Chuckies, the aliens and the Candymans.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.